Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast. This is Jamie Russo. This episode is brought to you by Community Manager University. I launched this program back in December and put a founding members group into the program and have been learning and enjoying the group and adding to it slowly. And it is amazing, the community that's being built and the information being shared and the learning that is getting done. So the platform is designed to train and develop community managers from day one to regional manager. It includes mini courses that cover the major buckets of the community manager role, including community management, operations, marketing, finance, and leadership. And the content is laid out in a graduated learning path so that community managers can identify what content is relevant to them, given their experience. They also get access to resources, templates. We do an in-depth training once a month, and we do a Q&A call once a month and have a Slack group where there is lots of information and just-in-time questions getting answered, which is super useful to everyone in the group. If you are interested in learning more about the program, you can go to www.everythingcoworking.com/community managers. Today, I get to chat with a longtime friend, Don Ball. He is a coworking OG, for those that haven't met Don before. So Don was one of the co-founders of Coco, which became Fueled Collective. We did not talk about this in the podcast, but Fueled Collective actually bought my co-working space in Chicago a few years ago. So we have a special relationship. They took over my beloved community and took great care of it. So Don has a really interesting journey through the co-working world. He talks about his background, Coco, the evolution into Fueled Collective, and his transition into working with Liquid Space on their Pro platform, which is a way for independent operators to access the demand that we're starting to see come out in full force from enterprise users. So talk a little bit about that platform and how we can participate on today's call. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Don. Today, I am sitting here through video only, but with one of the OGs of the OGs of co-working, Don Ball, who's one of the co-founders of originally Coco, now Fueled Collective, started in Minneapolis, and we'll let Don kind of talk about the evolution of that business. But Don, you have been doing this for a long time, and I can't wait to kind of talk about your story and what you're working on today. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me. And I'll be one of the only OGs who nobody recognizes. They'll be like, who the heck is that?
You're quiet. You're totally behind the scenes, but you're like, what year did you open Coco?
Yeah, we opened on January 4th, 2010. So it was a year ago this January, or I mean, 10 years ago this January.
That's wild.
Yeah, yeah.
What's even more wild is that you hit a January 4th date, because everyone says, I'm going to open in January. What a perfect time. Everybody's coming out of the holidays, and then construction happens and no one hits it. April, June.
Yeah, I think that says a lot about my co-founder, Kyle Kulbroth, that we set a date and hit it. That's entirely in his nature to like do what he says and say what he'll do.
Make it happen.
Yeah, make it happen. Yeah.
Totally. Okay. So Don, life pre-coworking, we were just talking about kind of the incarnation of coworking and how it used to be just kind of this totally new innovative thing where you could get out of your house and be with your people. And that was super new 10 years ago. And now it's not so new. So tell me, what was your life pre-coworking? And then seg into your co-working moment. What made you start Coco?
I don't think it was anything extraordinary about my life prior to co-working. I was a marketing copywriter for years, did that mostly freelance, but then worked at an agency for a while. I then ended up after the dot-com implosion, I did what seemed smart at the time was I left a cozy job to start a usability practice with two other guys. And that was a slow motion train wreck. These were the smartest people I've ever known, but we didn't have a salesperson or an kind of an account manager amongst us. And ultimately
those things you need to get clients, darn it.
Yeah. We were really good at what we did, each of us.
Yeah.
But in between magic, we didn't have, and it just did not work well. So as that was, you know, kind of descending into, it was threatening to become like a, you know, a fiery explosion. And then that's when we kicked off Coco, and that ended up kind of saving my bacon. I had a new thing that actually made some money that we could turn to. You know,
wait, but how did you come up? I mean, the concept of co-working was super new in 2010. How did this?
Yeah, it was newish. Well, I got involved with, and I think these things are all related. I was an early social media aficionado. Okay. Like Flickr, I got on really early. Twitter, I got on, I think, fairly early. It got involved with a group in town that was all Twitter people. You know, this is like 2007, I think,
okay.
And maybe 2006. So I want to say somewhere around there. And so I was really enamored by that early social media. I mean, Flickr was actually a really dynamic community. I made a bunch of friends internationally on there.
Hmm.
And then I created me and two other people created like a marketing bar camp before I knew what bar camps were. It was like a peer-to-peer conference, you know, an unconference. And so we put that together. And I was just really drunk on that.
Yeah. Sort of community and
Yeah. I just was like really into not just learning from other people, but seeing the experience that how people felt when they could share with their peers. I used to think like everybody leaves these on conferences feeling like $1 million. It was very different than a traditional conference where you listen to the accomplished person in your field talk about all these great clients and the great work they do. And you leave feeling like a schlub going like, I don't have great clients. I don't have great work. Nobody knows who I am. If I want to be depressed, I'll go to a conference and just how many people I didn't meet, how many sales I didn't make,
yep,
how much I'm not accomplishing in my career. That would be it. With an unconference, I'd leave going like, I've had 10 new people. I have new friends. It was a night and day difference. So to me, co-working, when I heard about it, seemed like it could be that same experience, but every day, which was really, that was electrical. There was, I think I saw like a wiki in our town that somebody had created, and everybody was going like, yeah, someone really ought to create a co-working space. And I was thinking like, well, that'll just keep on happening. People would just say, yeah, someone ought to do something about that. So into that
vacuum, one day.
Yeah, one day. Yeah, we decided to do this. Someone did a co-working experiment in our town, and there was cafe that they were able to rent out every Monday.
Oh, nice. Like a little pop-up.
I found out later it's called a jelly, basically.
Yep.
But yeah, 2009 in October or November, somebody did this. The only reason that matters is because Kyle and I went to this curious people on that first Monday. By the second Monday, we decided we were going to do this. And that's November. And then by January 4th, we were open. So, you know.
That's wild. Right.
Yeah. I don't think it could ever happen again, but it happened then.
Totally. Okay. So you opened your first space in like 2 months.
Yep.
And then tell us sort of the evolution of Coco and into Fuel. This is, you know, it's maybe the short version.
Yeah, absolutely. Coco was pretty straightforward. We spent a year trying to prime the pump and get people trying to convince them why they should have co-working as an actual budget item when they've never done that before.
Yep.
They've never spent money on this. So that was hard, you know, getting people to go. The breakthrough for us was a year and a half in. We got the space in Minneapolis. We started in St. Paul, which is the lesser of the two cities. Sorry, okay, Everybody. But then a year and a half later, we got this beautiful space called the Minneapolis Grain Exchange, which looks like a train station, 45-foot ceilings and window, you know, like floor-to-ceiling windows. It's gorgeous. And once we got that—
Gorgeous, like, but I don't want to see your utility bill. Yikes.
We don't pay it. That's the thing.
Oh.
We don't pay it. The Grain Exchange is this, like, they own the building still, this exchange. Oh. And I don't think they're good landlords. Because
okay, great.
Yeah, because you don't charge us for that. So anyways, so it gave us a free run. And that like gave us so much press locally and drew so many people that I think we really became viable at that point. Because this is like a 16,000 foot square space, which is big for something with 40-foot ceilings.
Yep.
Anyway, so once we did that, and then Eric Schmidt came through, and then we got hooked up with Google Google for Entrepreneurs. And yeah, it was just kind of a nice ride. Then... somewhere, I want to say it was like 3 years ago in the fall, all the competitors showed up. I mean, like honestly, in the space of one quarter, the co-working inventory in our town grew by 300% in one quarter.
Wow.
You know, and then of course WeWork brought their funny money, yep, which I have said from day one, and the press has vindicated me.
Yeah.
I was like, there's no way, you know, they have triple our cost basis and they're charging less. than us. And that really became hard. So, you know, the lesson we learned there was that co-working went in a short space of really like 8 years, went from being a movement when we started to becoming a commodity, I dare say. Like, it's just too easy for someone to get into the business. It's really hard for someone to, you know, if someone says like, well, why should I come to your place? You know, it's not honest for me to say like, well, we have such better community than anybody else, because that's not true. Like, every place probably has a decent community. It's whoever shows up, you know? And so how do you differentiate yourself? You know, is it better fit and finish? Well, that's great until the next person spends $10.
Oh, right. That's a race to
that's right.
a disaster.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So all those commoditizing factors come into play. And so one of the things our Fueled Collective came up because we were looking for a growth path. And then this crazy guy from Cincinnati approached us. And I understand he had approached a bunch of other operators too. And they were looking for somebody where they could take the DNA and basically turn it into a franchise. And so we decided to bite and started working with this group out of Cincinnati to see about creating a franchise offering. Partway through, they come back to us. They go, hey guys, we have a problem. You're profitable, but you're not profitable enough. Because it turns out for a franchise, you need a really big margin because you're going to snatch 8 to 9% from the franchisee. They still need about 20% at the end of the day.
A bunch of centralized costs that you're going to pay for. And then right, the machine that runs the whole thing needs.
Yep.
Yeah.
But for each franchisee who's an investor to feel good about it, they still need to be left with like a decent margin. So they said, we have to do something to amp up your margins. So what they came up with was almost like the idea of combining co-working with like Soho House. And so the idea was to really put hospitality in there, to have much bigger piece of the revenue be coming from meetings and events in the bar. Yep. And so that's kind of the central concept with Fueled Collective. And we opened a space in Cincinnati, which is kind of like our model space. It's been killing it ever since.
They knew what they were doing, yeah.
The model really works. And so Kyle and I, since then, we're trying to, you know, we have a lot of legacy spaces, which are just co-working only. We've been trying to leaven that with more of the hospitality. It's not always easy because the Cincinnati space was designed from the ground up.
Right.
To allow for like
very intentional
current events and meetings, and it doesn't put out the coworkers. Like you could sit there and like not realize that a group of 50 people just came in and out and had a raucous time. In most of our spaces, if not all of them, if you bring in 50 people and they're kind of having a good time, everybody's put out. And
people are not getting work done. It's
Yep.
And I would guess like the food and beverage piece is just really hard to retrofit.
It is. Yeah, it's true. The cost is tremendous to do that. But if you start from the ground up and you design the space accordingly, one of the things that a big investment that was made with Fueled Collective originally was to bring in a designer for the space. And there was one woman in particular named Vicky Charles, who was the head of design for Soho House. And then she left to start her own practice and do like George Clooney's house and things like that. So she's really high end. I mean, if you look her up online, you're like, wow, she's really a whole brand under herself. But she designed this, like that kind of whole space design system that was used in Cincinnati and that we hope to use in some spaces going forward. So that was kind of the whole Fueled Collective idea, was to kind of not jump tracks entirely, but to bring an adjacent category into the business. So, you know, you could jump all the way to hospitality, but now you're competing with event centers and hotels, but this is like bringing both together.
So I'm dying for one of these in Burlingame, just so you know. A workspace that we're at a place you can socialize, and it's an accessible sort of club space, you know, a place where you can meet people for drinks, but, you know, go in the back and, you know, get into your office or to your desk. I think it's such an interesting model for kind of the, you know, I mean, I'm sure you'll get some in urban cores, but sort of the suburban,
I think it's
places where people need a gathering place and sort of that multi-purpose space.
Yeah.
Super exciting.
Yeah. There's one space that we're looking at, or a space that's really be a development that would make it, that would make, if this location comes through. And as I was telling you before, you know, like deals, you're working on deals all the time and most of them don't come through. Very few do. So my fingers are crossed on this one. But the idea would be, it would almost be like a de facto conference center because there's nothing in that area.
Yeah.
A good conference center. And I think even in the burbs, there's enough headquarters out in the burbs and you know, corporate entities, and that conference centers are still needed. You know,
yeah,
we're not all going to go downtown to the Hyatts and the Hiltons. So anyways, so that's Fueled Collective. My fingers are crossed that we can move more into that model and quickly enough.
Yeah, I think it's an exciting evolution of the industry for sure. Kind of the hybrid approach. And I assume kind of the average footprint is larger than kind of your typical co-working space. How many square feet is the Cincinnati location?
That's about 40.
Okay.
It's across two floors. Yep. And
I mean, that's on the larger end when you're not doing, you know, a floor for 100 people. You know, I think a lot of the larger spaces are kind of doing the really big team suites and they're pulling in enterprise, you know, users or startups or what have you to take a big chunk of space. They're not, you know, onesie twosieing that space out.
The other difference too is the field in Cincinnati, and I think this is the model going forward, is retail space. And the landlords,
like the fitness space?
Yeah. Landlords are not, they don't have a lot of great prospects right now for retail. Gap is not taking 40,000 square feet.
Right.
Like they used to, you know what I mean? So I think that's another thing, is that the idea of having this kind of club workspace / club space / event space that becomes an amenity to the rest of the building, which is office space, but it's at the retail level. That's an enticing prospect for some landlords.
Yep.
So yeah, hopefully that works. I suspect you mentioned that, you know, it's a hybrid. I suspect we're going to see a bunch of hybrid models that people will come up with cool other things to combine with co-working and create like these little like lifestyle pockets.
Yeah.
So that's kind of exciting. We're still, you know, it's kind of a new creative phase for the industry. I use air quotes. I can't believe it's an industry.
It's an actual industry. Yeah. I know. But the fun thing about it is you're 10 years in and there's still a lot happening, a lot of evolution and things that are still possible.
And I suspect if we have a big, you know, downturn, knock on formaldehyde or whatever this is, I don't know what kind of hide this desk is. But anyways, you know, if there's a downturn, I think that could actually be a real, you know, kind of a creative instrument. Because it's going to force a lot of people to rethink what they do. And it opens up kind of new opportunities for rethinking what it is that's being offered.
Yeah. So speaking of kind of what's new and rethinking. So you've transitioned out of a day-to-day role at Fueled and you have some interesting projects that we're going to talk about today. Do you want to kind of kick off that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, still an owner, not an employee. I still go to the board meetings and cause trouble there.
Nice.
But, you know, I'm more of the person you want at the early stages of a startup because I really enjoy those moments when there's really no right or wrong. There's just like survival and getting to some measure of success.
Building, creating.
Yeah, creating
like excitement.
Yep, creating out of thin air, innovating as, you know, but can't innovate forever. Otherwise, you'll drive your employees crazy and they will rebel. So I kind of reached my point of like least utility and was also kind of, you know, not enjoying developing processes, ongoing processes and measurements because that's what a mature business does. So in November, I kind of like decided to head back into the wilderness and hang my own shingle as a consultant. And I'm trying to figure out what kind of consulting that is. It could be, in some cases, I wrote a whole book on retirement for millennials for a big wealth management company. So that's one end of the spectrum. I helped somebody figure out how to position their business to their new corporate masters. So there was kind of like positioning work and storytelling work. And then lo and behold, I ran into, you know, again, because I've known him for 10 years, but ran into the Liquid Space folks, and they were looking to develop a new product and needed to think about the storytelling aspect and how to frame it up. And so I jumped in on that. And that's kind of like occupying a lot of my time right now, developing this new product for Liquid Space.
Yeah. So Liquid Space, for folks that don't know, I feel like they're, they've been steadily building their business over the last, roughly 10 years. Although that was also the very beginnings for Liquid Space. And Mark has confessed that he would come to the GWA conference and be like the guy in the back that didn't really buy a ticket with his iPad, like showing his beta to anyone who would listen. And today they have this really robust platform where people can find space, like, you know, practically by the minute, by the hour and the, hour, day, month.
Yeah, multi-month.
Yeah.
I think the original use case, as I recall, Mark, I think we were in Chicago and he was saying like, so you're walking down the street and you're like, I need a meeting room. And I was thinking like, who walks down the street and needs a meeting room? You know, like I usually know like well ahead of time if I'm going to need a meeting room. But anyways, maybe it's a San Francisco kind of use case.
Totally. Know? Right. Oh, the VC called. We must meet right now.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. And I was like, and I didn't understand that.
He had been in Palo Alto before that. So
right,
I think
exactly.
That probably was his mindset. And then he gets out and finds his like real world customers. Yeah.
Yeah. And over time, that's really changed because it's not just I need drop-in space, although that's totally part of the deal, but you've gotten the idea of having a marketplace. And I believe Liquid Space is the biggest digital marketplace for like flex officing, but the use case has changed so that now you have, in addition to like, I need an hourly drop-in or I need a day office, you've got like people like basically using the platform to find space for whole teams. I need space for 20 people in Poughkeepsie for the next 2 years. Like that's a very,
yeah. I mean, they're really capitalizing on the whole sort of, you know, fast, flexible, fun, as Mark likes to put it. I think he stole that from Lisa Picard at EQ, but yeah, they're kind of uniquely positioned to kind of fill that spectrum.
So the next step that they're taking, that is what I'm helping with, is the idea of creating, you know, an offering just for enterprise. And the central conceit there is that more large employers are embracing co-working, but they don't go about it the same way, you know, a small business might.
Yep. They don't go to Yelp and look for the right location in each city. And they don't.
Each city. Yeah. Yeah. Because they're placing multiple teams. You know, if you imagine someone in corporate real estate, over the course of a year, they may place 20 teams in more than 20 locations. In other words, they're finding places for remote workers and remote teams, and they really can't afford to work with the one-offs.
Right. You know, the, and it's somebody in corporate real estate making this decision, right? It's not. So the other sort of the today's liquid space user could be, you know, like you or me or somebody looking for meeting space or a day pass or a place to go, you know, join a co-working space. Mm-hmm. And they can kind of do their full search on liquid space and they can, you know, go in and tour or just pop in for a meeting and make that decision. And it's sort of an end user consumer decision. Like somebody's using liquid space as they would use, you know, Google or Yelp or other search engines. The enterprise user is like, somebody in corporate real estate has got to make a decision for a bunch of people that they like, you know, may not even know, but they know some requirements. And, you know, I kind of get exposed. I go to work tech and some of the more enterprise type events. Mm-hmm. They're so focused on creating an experience for their remote groups that is on par as much as possible with like what they can get at the corporate office, which is not that easy, you know, for some of them.
Yeah, so they're looking that's really at, smart of them.
Yeah, but I think that's probably part of what you're trying to solve is creating sort of a filterable platform where they can go and meet their requirements. But I'll let you, I'm guessing, you tell me what it's going to look like.
The first problem that you encounter, if you're talking about, you know, someone in corporate real estate or someone who's in maybe a workplace strategy, corporations don't procure like everybody else. Like you described, you know, like if I'm a small business owner, it's for my team of five people. I'm both the consumer and the user.
Yep.
Whereas when you get people in corporate real estate departments, you know, they have internal clients that they're trying to source spaces for, and they don't want to sign and negotiate a separate agreement for every individual co-working shop. They don't want to have different payment terms for every single instance that they end up procuring. So you can see why a lot of corporations have gone to like WeWork and Regus. It absolutely fits the way they buy it. One agreement, one monthly, you know, itemized invoice, and I unlock this entire world. Right. Now, the catch is that the vast bulk of co-working inventory is not Regus or WeWork.
Yep.
You know, as laudable as it is, the network that those two organizations have put together, you have tons of individuals like Littlefield Collectives and smaller that are out there. And so how do you possibly transact with those people? Because it just doesn't work for a big corporation to go to them individually. As an operator, you know, someone with that experience, I'll tell you that we would have companies like we have 3M and Google and we've had Target come through and United Healthcare and General Mills, you know, some Fortune 50s, Fortune 500s have come through, but that's almost always by accident. We could never afford to actually chase down those people. Yep. The sales cycles are long.
Yep.
And getting on their approved vendor list is sometimes it's a murderous process to do that. They guard those fairly carefully. Mm-hmm. And then even just, you know, their payment terms might not always be, you know, what you want to hear. You know, like I need the money in, you know, like 15 days. Sorry, we pay every 45. And what are you going to do, right? You can't change them. So that's the dilemma. They don't want to shop with you and you have a hard time going after them directly. So this is where like the idea that we're pursuing with Liquid Space Pro is making basically approaching the enterprises with a very enterprise friendly platform that says there's just one master agreement. You know, there's only one vendor basically for their purposes, which is Liquid Space. And then also making it easy, you know, for all the suppliers down to the one-off locations to be on the platform, be visible to the corporations and to transact the business. So what that gives a company is like access to spaces in all the geographies they need. And what's interesting is, you know, big employers don't necessarily, while they do need space in major metros, they also have spaces in secondary and tertiary metros. And even sometimes they might have remote workers in literally remote places, you know, rural areas. So the more depth of inventory that there is, the better actually for attracting those large companies. But it just has to be made easy. So that's what we're setting out to do. We have kind of a private beta that we're going to be putting together in the next few weeks. So we've already approached a number of operators to be part of that. We're definitely open to hearing from more. And on that, we're going to introduce some enterprise partners we already have. So basically, we can start trying out the whole functionality and see how it works.
So John, what's different in whatever you can share, of course, in terms of the functionality versus kind of the standard LiquidSpace platform that's been available? I mean, is part of it like there's now just this tipping point of enterprise demand where it kind of makes sense to...
There is, but you know, it is, I mean, so basically if you're an operator, and I assume that maybe the bulk of our listeners are people on the supply side of things.
Absolutely. And I would guess a number of them are listed on LiquidSpace already.
Yeah, because it doesn't cost anything to be on there.
Yep.
I think the key thing is this idea of the common license, what we call the Dash license.
Yeah.
So it's just one agreement. And basically as an operator, like when Field Collective got on board, we said, okay, great. We will agree to abide by the Dash license. And so that way that opens up all the large employers who are saying, we only want to use the Dash license. It's as to describe the license, it's pretty standard stuff. Most of the operative parts of it are nothing that would raise an eyebrow, but it just allows for just clean licensure of the space. There is an interesting little piece of it called house rules. And what that is, that's like a little custom, you know, so a little WYSIWYG, you could say, a little WYSIWYG window that lets you add in the particulars about each of your location that you need. Like our space in downtown Minneapolis doesn't allow, the landlord doesn't allow dogs. So that's something you would enter in the house rules, can't bring dogs. The rest of the space is no problem. We might have some restrictions on what we can do with booze because the city's really tight on that. So those kinds of things, you basically get to customize your Dash license for each of your local instances, and then you're good to go. So that's kind of the one key thing. The other thing, which is something I actually didn't even know about because I wasn't in the right part of the business to know about this until I started working with LiquidSpace, and that's that there's a sales dashboard for actual, you know, space operators. So what you can see is that somebody is conducting a search in your area for this particular kind of space. And then you basically can choose to intervene in that process and send them a proposal.
Yep.
They may not have been considering you, but you can jump in. It's almost like using like on LinkedIn, they have the in-mail.
Yeah.
If you get Sales Navigator, you get a bunch of in-mail points. So it's the same idea that you can kind of jump in and try to catch their attention, say like, hey, I have something that would be perfect for what you're looking for.
Yep.
And then you get to see basically what your metrics look like, the number of searches coming to your listings, searches being done in general, how you're actually doing on your conversion rate. So it's a little bit of a CRM within the LiquidSpace platform.
Yeah,
so
that's gotten more robust recently. And it's, I think they've rolled out some updates to that. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, it was all new to me as of like a month ago. And so I was like, wow, where has this been all my life?
Totally. Yep.
So yeah, so that's a general idea. In the middle of all this, some people may have heard the GSA, which is the federal government's, you know, purchasing arm, put out an RFP for co-working. And so that's something that's been processed. A bunch of people are applying to that. LiquidSpace is jumping in as well because there's room for aggregators to be part of that. And the same idea is give the government access to a much broader and deeper inventory of spaces that in addition to the biggies. And you would imagine that the biggies are going to try to get in on this as well. And that makes sense that they would be part of the solution. But for the rest of us who operate in smaller markets or in smaller, you know, chains, there's a shot for us to get in on this opportunity as well.
Yeah, I think that's super exciting. Mark, who's the CEO of LiquidSpace, I think we may have been referring to him without clarifying. Since we've known Mark for 10 years, he had the GSA speak at the GWA conference this year. And I think, you know, some people were like, that's interesting, you know, all right. But I think, you know, he can smell some of those things coming. And it's pretty exciting that they're kind of more broadly looking at flexible office. And they're sort of analogous to that enterprise user in that they want to support small business, and yet you have to be large enough to give them some, you know, coverage that they're looking for. So it's hard to get their attention. I think the platform is going to make that really interesting for folks that otherwise, you know, just wouldn't qualify.
It's similar to trying to get corporate business or enterprise business. You have to be large enough to underwrite the legal processes, you know, just the amount of time it takes to write a proposal that meets the standards, because the RFPs have so many provisions in them that, you know, and you look at some of these things, it's everything from executive orders that have been recently or been enacted in the past, certain kinds of, there's just all sorts of really big requirements that you have to make sure that you can.
Oh, I think, I mean, Mark mentioned they're ISO certified.
Yeah.
It is, and no one else is. You know what I mean? Like, right, maybe Regis, I don't know. But to your point, that's one of those things. And I asked him the other day why they did it. Now I can't remember. I think maybe he just knew, like, at some point they'd be going after government, you know, business or maybe some of the enterprise. But, like, you know, you and I are not ISO certified. So,
oh, yeah. And I think if I were to tally the hours that the whole team has put on, like, just this GSA opportunity so far, it's staggering. That's just to make sure that you, you know, your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed so that you don't, you aren't rejected out of hand.
Right.
By some, you know, the person reviewing the proposal for some little thing that you overlook. That's the horror stories we hear, is that people like, we were rejected for this little technical reason. And you're like, oh, come on. But that's how it is. And I suspect, I have no way of knowing for sure, but I suspect that this GSA opportunity is just like them putting a toe in the water, because it's only for GSAs, for the GSA itself. But they leave open the possibility that other agencies could get
We'll get.
We may see some bigger things come through later.
Yeah. Well, and so I think the other sort of interesting thing about working with a government that Mara Hauser actually pointed out last week is, I think she and Mark were talking about it, that even once you get awarded, you know, the opportunity to be a supplier, you have to go knock on doors.
Right.
So sort of back to your point about, like, well, you and I don't have the resources to do that, but Liquid Space does. You know, they'll probably hire someone to go knock on agency doors and, you know, what are your space needs over the next 2 years and how can we help you? And they'll come back to the platform and look for solutions. But so it's not like the dashboard that we just talked about where you're going to see all this flurry of activity. To some extent you may, but some of it is like poking around and letting the government know, hey, you can take advantage of this and we're here. And so there's still a sales process to go
through. You've only, if you win a contract, you win the right to basically solicit.
Right.
You have to market to people and you have to do demand generation, which is.
Yeah. So then you have to have the resources in place to do that.
So for somebody coming from the quick fix startup world, you know, where you're just like, you know, let's just get some business in here tomorrow. This is a different process because you're really thinking, you're thinking five steps ahead to ultimately win business at a volume, right? At scale.
By the way, does the phrase ISO certification just make you want to crawl under your desk?
Well, yes, typically.
Talk about process. Like,
which Don, you're in charge. ISO? Which ISO, right? They have so many different numbers.
And I know. I didn't even, I wasn't even going to throw out a number. I was like, is it 9,000? Is it, I don't know. What?
It's 27001.
Oh, 27001. Okay.
Anyways.
Yeah.
That's far in the future. So I'm not even sure what that's about.
Right. Totally. You know, one thing I want to go back to the dash license. Do you know what I think is sort of interesting about that? Is, and I don't know if you guys had this challenge, is I think operators get a little stuck on the dash license because it's like one page.
Yeah.
So they're comparing it to their, you know, 10 page. I've had this problem myself. I have this agreement that I've had since day one and I want it to be shorter. And yet every time I look at all the legal, you know, clauses, I think, well, what if? I can't take that out. What if? It's just like, But we did recently, we used the dash as a base and then we added back in some things that we didn't want to live without. But I think, you know, there's that mental hurdle of saying the dash is enough and it's okay. It's only one page because the enterprise clients, that's what they need, right? Super simple, fly through their approval process. That's what we need. It's standard. I'm sure you've run into this too. When you get enterprise, anybody who works for a company that wants like an office, they're redlining your agreement. Their attorney's got it. And then you got to make a custom agreement. And does your attorney have to look at it? It's like.
Now you're in the version management game.
Right.
You know, and having to keep track of like which version of, you know what I mean? Like that's, I kind of see the dash license as insurance against having to negotiate with a corporation's team of 20 lawyers.
Right.
Because that stuff will kill you.
Totally.
You know, you just like, I don't know what your lawyers charge, but the ones that we use at Fuel, my gosh, that I went into the wrong business, clearly.
Right.
Oh, those billable
rates.
Well,
this is why people
crazy.
Think they want to be attorneys and then it looks on paper, but.
Yeah, but then you end up redlining leases and it's not like a lot of fun.
Totally. So, Don, I'm curious for people listening, you're doing a beta platform. So some operators are kind of in that beta group. What will this look like over time for, you know, Will it be open to all operators? Will there be some qualifications? Do you have a sense as to what that will look like in terms of how listeners will be able to one day participate?
Yeah, I mean, the beta is simply just where we do our homework and, you know, and discover situations that we couldn't have anticipated and then solve for them. Yep. So that what follows, I think we're trying to move pretty quickly on this. So what follows the beta is a public, you know, not public offering, that's a different thing, but we make it available to the broader world. And the whole goal is to get as many people or as many operators on it as possible. That's how it works, because a company shows up and says, oh my gosh, I can find a little space in Naperville, Illinois.
Where their people are. I mean, that's going to be the beauty. Like, enterprises are trying to make it easier for their people to not have to go too far from home. And home is, you know, everywhere.
There's an example in your area where LiquidSpace worked with Genentech.
Yeah.
Right? And so their whole thing was like, their employees, while they are paid well, they still suffer from the fact that they can only afford to live an hour and a half, 2 hours out.
For sure.
And commuting
every day. They're riding a bus to work every day.
Yeah. And quality of life declines, right? And when you're thinking about, like, I'm missing my kids' games, you know, all those things. So what they did is they basically worked with LiquidSpace, and you may know some of the space operators who are involved too. They basically created like a handful of officially sanctioned Genentech drop-in spaces and gave employees permission to just go to those. So whereas your commute was an hour and a half, it's now 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then they set it up on the platform that basically like they could check in, and it was all under like a master procurement agreement. So basically Genentech just, you know, you show up as an employee, you check in, it just goes on the company tab, but it's all pre-approved. That's kind of like a vision of where it could go in some cases, where like a large employer could just say like, we have 50 spots across the US that you as an employee are free to stop at. And I think most of us know that, you know, what companies pay per square foot per employee for office space is an absurd amount of money.
Oh, especially at Genentech. Their campus is nice.
It's pretty swank, huh?
It's super nice. Yeah, they did some updates. I met the woman who runs their real estate group. Mm. It's pretty forward thinking. Ann Bamesberger is, I think, her last name. So she gave me a tour of their, I mean, it's set up. Have you talked to them at all or just?
I talked to one of their, you know, corporate real estate guys.
I mean, they've tested the sort of free address. They have neighborhoods. They're building 35. It's got this beautiful like coffee, co-working type, you know, area in it. I mean, it was major sort of culture shock for them at the time, but you know, all new buildings, and they're really kind of trying to be forward thinking about how they help people work. But as you and I were talking about before we started recording, you know, they're right in the heart of like where all the traffic is. To your point, it's like totally impossible to get to Genentech. It's super painful with traffic. So yeah, I love that. And for operators, it's great because they're selling, you know, buckets of space, lots of open space. You know, I don't think they're even necessarily taking private space. I think they need access to meeting rooms for privacy and whatnot.
Yeah, as any team would. Here's the fun part that I overheard was that you would think that a major corporation looking for space is going to go for stuff that looks super corporate. But in this case, they deliberately said, no, we don't want everything to look like WeWork. Sorry, I don't mean to use them. But they said, we don't want it to all look like that. We want some stuff that's homey and casual. Yeah, and I was like, oh my gosh. So, you know, the kind of homey spaces that I think a lot of us have built are actually in demand. People appreciate that. And they actually could make it into corporate specs, if you can believe it, or corporate requirements. That is a bit more comfortable and casual and has a good feel to it. These are things that I think a lot of us have built into our spaces and always felt like weren't exactly quantifiable, but were important.
Yeah.
So to see that a major corporation has actually said, yes, we want some of that, is really hopeful for those of us who are, you know, just have a handful of spaces or one space, put a lot of love into it. And you're thinking like, well, you know, will anybody besides, you know, the lonely freelancer appreciate this? Well, it turns out yes. So I'm encouraged by that, because I think what it means is that a lot of us with the ability to get in on this, the enterprise game, can open our doors to a lot of people who actually want what we're offering. Just the fact they work for a major company and previously were in a cubicle farm doesn't mean that they want to kind of let down their hair, you know, and actually kind of be a coworker. So it's good.
Totally. And hang out with people who are doing innovative things and who are running their own businesses, like super energizing for them. But I think the thing to remember, I think this has evolved, but I feel like in the early days, there was this like anti-corporate member, like they were somehow not also humans.
Human. With, yeah, exactly.
No. You know, interests and a need for community and kids at home.
They might have like a stronger need, actually, you know?
Totally. For sure.
I think you have to stay open. We had a lesson in our early days of Coco where we had a guy show up who we, and I remember we were all like, I don't think he's going to fit in. He's kind of corporate. He's got the tassel loafers and the pleated pants. And,
you know, we're
totally judging him on appearances, which is wrong. But he turned out to be, I have to say, this guy, Dave, has turned out to be really like my favorite member of all our members. And the reason is because he showed up and it changed his world. And he figured out that he could be successful by showing up in a space like this and giving to other people. And as a result, I think he's made more inroads. And the other day, he visits us basically between contract gigs at bigger companies. So when the contract is over, he shows up at Field and hangs out for about 3 months until he finds his next one. So some guy shows up after Dave was there. Some guy shows up and he had just been fired as the president of a company because he told the owner that he didn't think he should spend all his money on motorcycles. And the guy said, well, then you could just leave. This guy shows up and he's kind of dejected and thinking like, God, what am I going to do next? You know, I have a weird talent set. He meets Dave and Dave starts showing him around, introducing him to people, offers to check his resume, turns him on to some websites that might be helpful. And then, so this guy, Gerard, says, Dave, why are you doing this for me? He goes, oh, it's just your turn. You get to, you know, show up and have your life change. So very woo-woo, I get it. You know, so not everybody's into this. This is just about, you know, real estate. But no, I don't think it is. I think this is very
That's
much
a great story.
Human beings showing up and helping each other or being helped. And I think that's a really righteous thing. And I would like to see it happen at scale.
Yeah.
I would like to see cubicle dwellers show up and go like, oh, I haven't had this experience before. I think I might like it. That, you know, that's kind of like, I think that's everybody wins in that case, right?
Totally. I love it. Okay. Well, keep us posted after the beta is done and when it's kind of widely, you know, ready for takeoff. And
yeah, I hope people see some signs of that we make enough noise that they go, oh, open for business.
For sure.
I'd say if anybody is an operator and they're not on Liquid Space, it's free to get on. And you could certainly, if you like to test things, you know, like with your marketing, you could certainly like list some spaces and see what happens. Use the dashboard to see kind of what activity you get. We even have recommendations built into the platform that encourage you to kind of like update your listing and keep it fresh and try different things. And so you could just go to the website, liquidspace.com, and click under List Space. That'll lead you to the right next steps. If you're already in, you might want to give the Dash license another look because that's kind of your ticket to this world of pulling in, you know, participating in this kind of volume business that we see coming. So that would be another piece of advice. And then if you're a large employer who happens to be listening to a co-working podcast, it could happen. I think also, you know,
could happen.
You can learn more about this whole idea, liquidspace.com/enterprise. There's some information. And obviously we would be happy to take any inbound emails from anybody. So
perfect. Thanks,
Don. Thank you for letting me talk about this.
No, I'm a big Liquid Space fan. It is, you know, I understand it's somewhat market specific. Not every market in the world has, you know, people looking for on-demand, but I love your point about testing because I also think markets where co-working is still early, it's early for everyone, right? So
yeah,
Liquid Space will be a part of that growth for sure. But we get tons of great members from Liquid Space, both meeting room and full-time members.
Oh, so that's great.
Big fan
that's
over great. Here.
Well, you know, and I would just say this as from my fresh experience as an operator in a saturated market, I think our market got overbuilt for what it is in a very short period of time. So marketing is really a hard game and you have to try different things. So I would never say like, this is the answer,
but
say you owe it to yourself to find out if it can help you.
Keep it in the mix.
Yeah, that's right. I imagine you've had episodes about marketing.
We do episodes, yes.
And lead generation. Oh,
totally. Although, if we want to do one, we're marketing to your point. I mean, it's, you know, always the hot topic because always the thing. How do you differentiate? How do you keep building your membership base? So,
exactly.
Anyway, for next time. Thank you, Don, for coming on and for sharing. And we'll stay tuned.
Thank you so much. It was an honor to be on your podcast.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.